This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Thousands of people gathered for peaceful demonstrations in downtown Cincinnati over the weekend as protests against deadly police violence continue. On Saturday at Washington Park, Audrey DeBose spoke about the 2015 shooting death of her son, Sam DeBose, at the hands of a now former University of Cincinnati police officer, Ray Tensing.
I was devastated. And if it wasn't for all of y'all being out here for this cause, for my cause, for every mother who got a child, cousin, brother, nephew, nieces, I mean, we just didn't come here. My child, he belonged to a kingdom. He had a whole huge family. Everybody was brokenhearted. So I can imagine how everybody feels. We just don't come here alone. God bless us with these children. And for people, I mean, anybody, to just take their life because you got authority, you got the gun, you got control. Just like, Lord, I don't want to focus so much on my son, but on everybody that's being murdered by the police who's supposed to be protecting us. We must continue this fight.
The weekend also saw hundreds march in the northern Kentucky suburbs of Fort Mitchell, Erlanger, and Ellesmere. Today in Newport, public defenders will march in support of Black Lives Matter. At 1 o'clock today, a demonstration is scheduled for outside the Hamilton County Courthouse in Cincinnati, and then every day at 6 p.m. at the Police Memorial outside Cincinnati Police District 1. And joining us now on the phone is David Pepper. He's the chairman of the Ohio Democratic Party and a former Cincinnati City Councilman and Hamilton County Commissioner. His new book, a political thriller, The Voter File, is available now. David, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
David, you're a Cincinnati guy. You held office here in this area. You're now leader of the state Democratic Party. Cincinnati is no stranger to this kind of dialogue, violence, conversation. What do you see happening now that's either different or similar to what this region experienced nearly two decades ago?
Well, I hope that we see, you know, more reform and a recommitment to reform, some of which has lagged. I was proud to be part of the council that negotiated and agreed to the collaborative agreement, where everyone came around one table and agreed to some major reforms that I think made the city much better and helped the city. But it's also clear that there's a lot more work to do. And I know when talking to members of council who I know that they are looking into every way they can to refresh what was a big step 20 years ago, but that may have lost a little momentum. You know, that things like the independent review panel that looks into complaints and uses of force needs to be fully funded, things like that. So I'll just say more broadly, as someone who watches the whole state, it was actually a wonderful weekend. If you looked closely, you know, big cities, tiny towns, suburbs, these protests, peaceful protests, took place all over the state. And diverse groups, some cities with almost no African Americans in the population, still had very strong statements and protests saying that Black Lives Matter. I think it was really encouraging, but now it needs to lead to real reform around policing, but also other issues. You know, over the weekend, the Democratic Party joined up with many of our leading officials in passing a resolution that racism itself is a public health crisis. And that's a very important statement to have made because, you know, we're seeing it in the COVID crisis. You know, the outcomes are very much tied to race, and African Americans are suffering more from that COVID crisis. That's another canary in the coal mine about the broader conditions here. So it's been very encouraging to see so much activity, so many people speaking out. You know, I happened to be in Yellow Springs, so my birthday of the weekend, my wife and I did a little trip hiking, and there were people there. There were people in Xenia as we drove through. So that's, you know, Cincinnati has had a huge expression of support and for change, and so have a lot of places around the state, and that was encouraging.
And we're talking with David Pepper, chairman of the Ohio Democratic Party. And David, you noted the party's support for designating racism as a public health crisis, but what exactly does that mean, and what type of response should it require?
I mean, I think the first thing is to say it, and it's, these are things that have not been said before, and we did that following up on the Franklin County Commissioners declaring that, Cleveland City Council, Summit County, where Akron is, Hamilton County is looking at it. And by defining it that broadly, I think it also gives, you know, some momentum to elected leaders at every level, be it county, which has a lot of different services that they oversee, the city, and others really start to take the steps. Again, there are a lot of common sense steps around police reforms. We did a number of them. Others can be done. You know, the ban on chokeholds is being talked about. Mental training of how police can do a better job, changing the culture, hiring, diversity. But if all you if and that's really, really important. But it can't stop there. I mean, so much, again, I mentioned health outcomes, equity in school funding. I mean, they all these, you know, it's not, if all of a sudden you see inequitable outcomes in almost any way you can measure it along so many sectors, it means you have a deeper problem. And our hope is, and a lot of the resolutions that are being passed at of that type, of that like we did, are also then calling for very specific steps to be taken in many of these areas. And I think that's you know, obviously the statement's important. And then having leaders at county, city, state level, and federal level too, obviously, taking up, you know, the specific steps that are needed in all the different areas that where racism continues to rear its ugly head.
David, you also noted that you were part of the Cincinnati City Council that worked on the original collaborative agreement between the city, the police department, some other agencies, and members of the community to try to spearhead some reforms and to improve the relationship between the police department and the African-American community here. That collaborative agreement is the topic of conversation again, because some are arguing that it is in need of a refresher. And as those conversations begin, do you, as a former elected official here in town with the experience of going through that the first time, have any words for the people who might be involved on what issues need to be explored and areas that might need improvement?
Yeah, I mean, I think it should be in, you know, this is why for a number of years we had a monitor to make sure that everything was being kept up to date, that we were picking up new issues that were relevant. And, you know, I think it needs to always be looked at. This is an evolution. Now, the steps we took 20 years ago were very good. And I will say, as I look around the state and other parts of the country, I think that actually I can see in other cities the lack of some of the reforms we did leading to bigger problems. Like the city of Columbus does not even have an oversight panel for citizen complaints like we had and strengthened through the collaborative. So those reforms were real. The mental, I heard from police officers after the mental health training we did, it's, and de-escalation training, it so changed how we would approach a scene that was, you know, a risky scene. So there are a lot of things that were done, but yeah, I think, you know, when I heard that that the level of funding for the oversight, the citizen review panel, has gone down, that's just not acceptable. This is something that has to be robustly funded. It's one of the most basic steps that can assure citizens that there's accountability when things that are done inappropriate or far worse, like we saw in Minneapolis. So I think they should look at all aspects of the collaborative, look at, you know, are there use of force policies now that even if they made sense when we did the collaborative, do not now because of other approaches. Oversight, that independent oversight, I think is critical, and I think you're going to hear action from City Hall on that. So, I mean, I certainly stand as a resource talking to folks. It was, to me, one of the most important things I did in my time in City Hall was put this into place, put a system of oversight into place, but you certainly, that was not a one-shot deal. It has to be continually looked at, continually improved, as we're seeing all around the state and country and in Cincinnati in recent weeks.
David, we're hearing, you know, that a lot of us need to listen more, that we need to have conversations with other people who are white, maybe our family members, as we try to find ways to understand what's taking place here. You're the leader of the Democratic Party in Ohio. I'm wondering what you see in that role as a conversation that might need to take place within the party. Do you see any type of internal reflection that's necessary for the Democratic Party as it relates to this current situation taking place across the country?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think I see several things. You know, we had our meeting on Saturday where we took up the resolution I talked about. We dedicated the beginning of that meeting to listening, particularly to the African-American leaders of our party, women and men, who are on the front lines of this in a way that others aren't. And we kicked off that meeting, which had all sorts of formal business on it, and said, time out. We need to listen of how we can all be allies on this, how we can't just allow our African-American elected leaders to be the voice of it. We all have to be that. And it was a very, very, frankly, compelling, challenging, productive meeting. I felt actually very good about it. And I think we can all, you know, at every level do that. But I also think that, you know, this is the other thing that can be done. And I mentioned this the other day. I happen to be on the group of state party chairs. I'm one of the leaders of that group. And I said to the president, you know, almost every mayor of a major city is a Democrat. There's no reason why we as state parties can't also, you know, play a role saying to all these mayors, hey, here's a checklist of the most basic things, or better than basic, of good things that you could be doing to take on the issues around police and violence and police community relations. You know, if you don't have an independent review panel, you are not even in the 21st century in terms of responsible, accountable policing. Have one. You know, and this is similar to what President Obama said the other day when he said there are best practices that we know work. And I think that the state parties can play a role, given that we have Democrats are the mayors of 14 to 15 biggest cities in Ohio. We can all, as state parties in the country, play a role in listening and fostering conversation, which we're trying to do, but also in taking a look at who's elected as a Democrat and saying, here's a checklist. Here are things that you could be doing that have worked elsewhere. And one reason I bring this up is because when I was on city council, you too often, as a city council member, you don't know what the rest of the country is doing. And you should, because actually that can be very helpful in trying to implement change. If it's worked somewhere else, then people who argue against it here, it's not a strong argument. So there's a lot of things we can do, and we're certainly having those conversations.
We're talking with David Pepper. He was a member of Cincinnati City Council and the Hamilton County Commission and is now chairman of the Ohio Democratic Party. David Pepper is also an author. His new book is called The Voter File. This is a novel, political thriller. David, I got to ask, the tagline on the cover of this book says, first, they hacked our election. Now they'll turn the country upside down. I wonder if people who might come across that can guess what your inspiration might be for this type of story.
Well, the funny thing is my first book actually preceded 2016, and it was about a Russian oligarch rigging the American election. So I try to write fiction, but a lot of it seems to be prescient as to what actually happens. And in this case, I certainly hope it does not happen. But the bottom line is, whether it's voting machines or other areas, you know, we're certainly vulnerable, as we've seen in 16. And it's, you know, let's be clear, Russians in 20 are already seeking to interfere. And so I sort of go through a process in my book writing of kind of thinking through what are the scenarios that we might be worried about, and this book obviously walks through one.
And this book, The Voter File, follows a journalist, Jack Sharp. He's your protagonist here in this story, and the attempt to hack the election starts with a relatively small and perhaps somewhat meaningless local election in Wisconsin, but it's uncovered later on that this is probably part of a broader scheme. So as Right. you're writing this, and as you're someone who is involved in the political process, do you see this type of thing transpiring? Do you see small attacks in small areas playing out and then possibly emerging as something more nefarious on a larger scale?
You know, sometimes you do. There are some organizations that are working. I don't want to say it's the level of my plot, which is a pretty sinister plot. But you know, on a broader national scale, you know, we saw the consolidation of polling places in Milwaukee around the time of pandemic. Why in the world of the pandemic would you want fewer polling locations, which would mean longer lines and more risk of spread? Well, a couple weeks ago, we started hearing from the Ohio Secretary of State, we may want to consolidate polling places in Ohio. And there also there's a group called ALEC out there that organizes state legislatures to do certain things. So there are some things that look like they're coming from your own state house or your own leaders in your state that do seem to come from a broader national level. And a lot of it ends up being around things like rules of voting, you know, number of polling places, how you vote. I'm afraid we're going to see a lot of similar approaches when it comes to making vote by mail more challenging or some other things. So, yeah, that does happen. My plot is, again, more extreme than what we're talking about here, but that is something that to pay attention to.
And David, your lead character is a journalist who,
correct,
like a lot of journalists are familiar with, lost a job but continues to work a little bit, then works with another journalist to tell this story. Journalism is playing a significant role in the current conversation about a variety of issues, of course. And then the journalists themselves are often becoming part of the partisan debate. Which journalists should this type of voter or this type of partisan trust? How do you see these types of conversations playing out in the country right now? And do you have your own, I guess, biases against certain mainstream outlets based on previous reportings or characterizations of them by others?
I mean, so I really am glad, and again, the first book I wrote years ago, it's still the same protagonist, I picked a journalist at a mid-level newspaper, the Youngstown Vindicator. I did that for a reason. These are mid-sized papers are, in those communities, often the only thing that's generating local news, and many of them are going under, or they're being bought up by larger corporations and turned to sort of little franchises that don't give nearly enough local news. And my main character, amid all the things he's trying to do, is living in that world. And a lot of his life that these books describe is the challenge of being a journalist in a world where newspapers are shutting down or having to go online to keep up and how that changes journalism, or being bought up by large entities and kind of, you know, in some cases broken up. And the Youngstown Vindicator itself, a few months after I put this book to bed, was bought up. It basically went out of business and bought up by another paper. And I think the risk of that is, whether it's covering local politics or national politics, that the weaker our system of journalism is, the more all this debate about what's true and what's not is you know, more dysfunctional. And I try to have my character, he's sort of a straight shooter, he's not ideological, but he's trying to get to the truth of things. And I do, you know, and so one of the themes throughout my books is the impact, the tough impact that the decline of especially print journalism is having in the way we think about politics, the way we converse about major topics. And yeah, that is, you know, here's an example in the very recent history. You know, a lot of production of newspapers, including the Inquirer, have now moved to other states. Well, that's pushed the deadlines up. And so the other day, after a major protest in Cleveland, the next day's Plain Dealer, because they've basically been bought up, they're producing out of state, they're printing the paper out of state. The next day's newspaper literally had the main story was fun things to do in Cleveland this summer, and not one photo of these massive protests. Why? Because the deadline's so early. So even the papers that are staying alive aren't able to be the paper of record in the way that they used to be. It's a real challenge. And let alone the new thing where Donald Trump, obviously, and others are starting to just really attack media as fake news, which is also you know, a really troubling trend that you see normally in countries that are more autocratic than ours is.
David Pepper is the chairman of the Ohio Democratic Party. His new book is called The Voter File. David, thank you so much for taking some time and chatting with us.
Thanks so much. Take care.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.